Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Yeah. KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast provided by Trader Joe's, a grocery chain open daily from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Lunch provided by Corbett Fish House, located at 5901 Southwest Corbett Avenue. Corbett Fish House serves seafood dishes open from lunch to dinner. Dinner provided by Bocce's on 7th, located at 1728 Southeast 7th Avenue, open Wednesday through Sunday from 4 to 9. Bocce's serves a full Italian menu. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. Molly O'Brien and Rich Moore will take the stage in the season opener on Friday, September 21st. For over 30 years, singer Molly O'Brien and guitarist Rich Moore have made it their mission to unlock the secrets of the canon of American roots music. They are geniuses at interpreting the essence of the songs they tackle. Experience them live at the Portland Folk Music Society season opener on Friday, September 21st at Reedwood Friends Church, located at 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland. The concert begins at 7:30 with doors opening at 7. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
On his Martin guitar, the poor folk thinks he's gonna be a star.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Portland Saturday Market. 45 years of handmade arts and crafts, freshly prepared international foods, and local music in downtown Portland, featuring live music and kids' corner events. Portland Saturday Market every Saturday and Sunday in Waterfront Park, now through Christmas Eve. Events schedule, vendor information, and more online at PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
You sit there handing down orders. You examine the terms of the deal. A car is always waiting. Other hands turn the wheel. The doors slide open before you. The doors slide shut behind. Other hands carry your luggage. Weightier matters engage your mind. You take the gold out of the earth. You throw the corpses in. One crop is as good as another, as long as the cash keeps pouring in.
The wheels must never stop turning, the machine must be obeyed. The future has got to be fueled, and there's a price to be paid.
Black like the dust, brown like the earth, this is our land, the land of our birth. Silently digging, digging our graves, choking our bodies, choking our lives.
Living on scraps, dying in debt, digging in darkness so our children can eat. Once we were free, greeting the sun, sharing the earth, giving thanks to the corn. Sang with the waters, sang with the wind, danced with the drum, circle without end.
Now we are silent. They have taken our tongues.
And good morning. That is the great Leon Rosselson with Who Reaps the Profits, Who Pays the Price. I'm Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. For the first time, I actually have a pre-recorded interview to present today as a membership special. It is an interview with Anand Giridharadas. His book, Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. He is the author of The True American and India Calling. He was a foreign correspondent and columnist for the New York Times from 2005 to 2016, and has also written for The Atlantic, The New Republic, and The New Yorker. He is an Aspen Institute Fellow, an on-air political analyst for MSNBC, and a former McKinsey analyst, which plays into this book. He teaches journalism at New York University and has spoken on the May stage of TED. And he lives in Brooklyn, New York. So enjoy, and we'll be talking with you in a few minutes. I'm speaking with Anand Giridharadas. Is that okay?
Anand?
Yeah.
Giridharadas.
Okay. Thank you. And he's the author of Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. Thank you for joining us this morning on KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I just interviewed Chris Hedges last week, and he also was a longtime foreign correspondent for the New York Times. You want to talk a little bit about that experience?
Sure, yeah. It was actually my first job. I grew up in the U.S. in Cleveland, Ohio, and then Washington, and with a few year stint in France in between as a child, and the child of Indian immigrants who had left India before I was born. And after college at the University of Michigan, I decided to, in the most improbable way, move to the country my parents had worked so hard to leave. And I moved to India and eventually became a journalist there for the New York Times, and had an extraordinary time telling the story of the rise and convulsions of modern India over 5 years. And it was an amazing way to, it was like my first full-time job in journalism, and it was in my early 20s. And it was an extraordinary experience because India in the 2000s, I don't know, it was sort of like America in the 1920s. I mean, it was just, it was the jazz age of India in many ways, and this time of great optimism and hope, and also, you know, in India's case, convulsions of the society and of family and the economy. And it was an extraordinary time to be a journalist and bear witness to what it is when one of the biggest, oldest societies in the world changes very fast.
And I assume that's the subject of your book, India Calling?
Yes, exactly. You know, India Calling was, when people write about societies changing, they often focus on the hard stuff, economic growth, companies, physical transformation, highways and bridges being built. And the reality that I chronicled in India for 5 years was that all of that stuff, the transformation of modern India, was sort of a disappointing and somewhat anemic story if you looked at it through that lens. It wasn't like China. There weren't skyscrapers everywhere. There weren't 38 international airports being built at this global standard. Many of the things we'd expect from the breakneck transformation of a modern country looks like. However, I kind of came to feel through my reporting that the big story in India was that the revolution was within, that there was a revolution in private life and in people's hearts and in people's families, where very ancient ideas in India of belonging, of the way to live a good life, what it means to be a loyal family member, what it means to be a good worker, what it means to be a good person, were being upended by the forces of domestic change, of changes in the law, of globalization, of money coming to India, and of urbanization and various other things. And I kind of told the story of the rise of modern India through five families living it.
To jump to your current book, there's some similarities because you kind of tell the story of how modern philanthropy has changed or not changed, but market-based ideas have taken over modern philanthropy completely, and you focus on certain characters, a series of people. Is that something you came to as a way of focusing your writing?
Yeah, I would say that a method that I sort of learned when I was writing my first book and have more or less stuck to is, you know, what I call ideas through people. And I actually teach a class at NYU, a journalism class for master's students called Ideas Through People. The way I think about my approach is, I mean, there's a lot of people who write about ideas for ideas' sake, a lot of scholars and theorists who do amazing work investigating ideas as ideas. And there's a lot of people who write very well about people and embed themselves in communities and really capture the granularity of people. I mean, novelists, even in the realm of fiction, do an amazing job of that, perhaps the best job of that. Part of what I've tried to kind of carve out for myself is an approach to writing nonfiction and journalistic nonfiction that brings both of those things to bear, that tries to write about some of the biggest ideas and questions of our time, but does so through ordinary people or extraordinary people living those ideas and grappling with those ideas and bouncing into those ideas and bending those ideas and reinterpreting those ideas. In India, that was the story of people led to question some of the essential ideas of Indian culture about what it means to be a son, a daughter, a worker, poor, rich, etc., in the context of great cultural upheaval. And in the new book, Winners Take All, which is my third book, I'm kind of once again trying to understand how the rich and powerful have taken over in the United States the work of social change and changing the world and making the world a better place, but in ways that are designed to protect their own advantages and keep themselves on top. And I decided to do that not as a pontificator throwing rocks at this world, but as someone who embedded in this world and told the stories of people struggling with their own identities and roles and efforts to both do well by themselves while doing good for others.
Obviously, those us reading the book have our own histories in dealing with these ideas in this world, the market world, and we can identify with it helps us maybe to sort of humanize that world, but to sort of see our way into it better, because we can see the dilemmas that, you know, people find themselves sometimes gradually later on in their lives, maybe in a very different place than they did initially. All of us only realize things, unfortunately, later in life than might have helped us early on. Anyway, first of all, before we get into these individual stories and the ideas that they represent, maybe tell us more about your own story, how maybe your ideas informed this book, and also, you know, how you came to write this book.
You know, I came to write this, I would say, at the intersection of an observation and an experience. The observation was that we were living in this age of extraordinary elite generosity, rich people giving money away, billionaires signing the giving pledge, elite college graduates, you know, desperate to change the world, to make the world a better place. And yet, at the same time, the most punishing time to be a working class American in 100 years, and the most unequal we've been in about 100 years, and an era in which the American dream has become elusive for most Americans. The chance to out-earn your parents has gone from being something that 90% of Americans experience to something that 50% of Americans experience, a crapshoot. Economic growth itself since 1979 has essentially bypassed the bottom half of Americans on average. 117 million people passed over by growth on average. So I became interested in how elites helping and how they're hoarding, and what the relationship is between the helping and the hoarding. And I became convinced through my reporting that a certain kind of helpfulness through philanthropy, through social enterprises, through impact investing, through charter schools, through all these things, is actually part and parcel of how elites maintain a system that predictably, reliably shuts most Americans out of progress. The experience component, because that was the observation, the experience was I was invited to be part of a fellowship at the Aspen Institute, which is sort of one of these benevolent, open, secret societies. And it was a great experience where you come together with a bunch of affluent, privileged people, mostly in the business world, to talk about how to make the world better. And as I got into this world, I mean, it was very nice, and I bonded with people, and we had these fun reunions. But I started to notice that, you know, they were sponsored by the Koch brothers and Goldman Sachs and Monsanto and Pepsi. And I started to wonder whether we were kind of changing the world or whether we were part of the defense of an indefensible status quo. And at one of our reunions, I gave a speech and spoke up and said, I don't think we're the change agents we think we are. I think we talk about doing good here, but we never talk about the companies that many of you work for doing less harm. We talk about giving more, but we never talk about the companies you work for taking less. And we have to get real about the fact that we may be the problem, not the solution. And the speech ended up having a bit of a life online, and it ended up becoming a book.
I was just sort of leafing through the book to get some stuff I hadn't gotten just a few minutes ago, and I came across, I think, a second last chapter. What you're describing, you describe somebody else making a speech similar that was breaking a severe taboo that, you know, you can tell people that they're, you know, that they're doing good and trying to change the world, but you can't remind them that they actually were part of the problem to begin with.
Precisely. That is one of the great taboos of the age. And I think it goes to something deeper, which is that in our age, rich people have been told a story and tell others a story that it is possible for them to change the world without sacrificing anything, without giving up the bad system that causes the very problems they would purport to solve. And I think that belief is the win-win. It's sometimes known it's doing well by doing good, but it's fundamentally this belief that we can make the world a better place while keeping what is bad about the world in place.
Okay, great. Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio. This is Linda. I'm here in Membership Central. We're inviting you to become a member of the station that's bringing you this great program. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with Paul Rowland, and you're getting to hear about a great book that you can get. It's talking about the wonderful charities we have in this country that maybe aren't so wonderful. Is Paul over there? Do you want to join me, Paul?
Yeah. Hi, Linda.
Good morning.
Yeah, no, it was a real treat to get this book and check it out and have a chance to interview the author, which is one of the wonderful things of having a radio show here on KABU, is you can interview these, you know, people who are really doing a lot of the work for us in doing all the research and getting out. And then we do the work of bringing it to you over the airwaves. And you can do the work by calling up the number 877-500-5266 and supporting our work.
I thought it was really interesting how the author was talking about how he was talking about that it's a taboo to say, hey, but that charity's coming from such and such, and they do this. I know one of the things people have really loved Bill Gates's work, and I know also, though, that he wanted to have all the help that went to farmers around the world through governments to include Monsanto seeds for growing. Well, we know that means it's taking away those Monsanto seeds are genetically engineered, and they will not, and they have Roundup in them, but even more than that, the farmer doesn't get to have the right to use the seeds from his plants again the next year. So that's the kind of charitable charity that maybe isn't so charitable.
And maybe that's why Monsanto sponsors things like what Anand was talking about, why we refuse the sponsorship by such evil corporations and depend upon the sponsorship by you, the listener.
You know, and it's really important that we know what's behind some of the giving, that we don't just, you know, think, oh, gee, isn't that wonderful? They turned out to be such a great person despite them being so rich. They're doing so much to help us. That we really look beneath, what is that help? And is it really helping society? And I know that you're one of those people that when you give your dollars, you want to know what it does. Well, you can give it to KBOO. We are absolutely not a charity, but we are an independent media, and you can count on us to bring you the truth the best way we can. You know, if we make mistakes, we own up to it, and we try hard to not make those mistakes, but we have to keep the lights on, and we have to keep everything running, and we need your support to do that. So give us a call this morning at 877-500-5266 and become a member of KBOO right now. Show your support for talk radio. Show your support for Paul Rowland's talk radio. You know, we note when you give. We note what programs you really like, not because it's a popularity contest, but because that lets us know if we're having the impact that we want to have. So show us the impact that Paul's having on your life. Give us a call right now at 877-500-5266.
And you'll know you want to get a copy of this book because the information is, well, I got to say, it feels right. You know, we understand that the global elite isn't really going to want to shake the boat up enough to challenge their own positions as global elite. But it feels like maybe if they, you know, try to alleviate a little suffering here and there, they can forestall the actual revolution. This is actually, you know, information that we need, information you can share in your communities, in your families. You want a copy of this book, Winners Take All, and that can be yours as a thank you gift this morning when you call in and contribute $80 or more in the course of a year. You can do that in a monthly way at $6.66 a month. You can round it up to, you know, maybe $7. That would be fantastic too. And get that support coming in here to KABU Community Radio. We are looking to raise $34,000, $34,298 left to raise in this fall membership drive. You are an important part of getting us to that finish line. We have a goal of $400 before the 9 o'clock hour to keep us on track. And right now you can get us on the board with your call, 877-500-5266, because we know it takes thousands of us working in the grassroots to do this in a very genuine, community-supported way. We are not beholden to the billionaire class. We are not beholden to the ruling elite. We are, in fact, doing this together. Listeners, community radio producers, often one and the same, right? Because we have producers from the communities making this radio that you are listening to. Right now, you know that you have an opportunity to get involved very viscerally at your community radio station this morning, 877-500-5266. Make a difference right now with your contribution of support. It is an important thing to do. It is a simple thing to do. And it is a meaningful thing to do. 877-500-5266. Contribute $80 or more over the course of a year, and we would love to thank you with a copy of Winners Take All. Do not wait until the last moment, because we only have two copies of that book. And I know last week we had a lot of folks wanting to get a limited amount of copies of Paul's book, so by Chris Hedges last week. So don't wait. You don't want to miss out. You want to call right now. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. It is your turn to claim the airwaves. It is your turn to make sure that the megaphone stays on loud and clear, amplifying the voices of all those that need to be heard with their important messages to change the world and make it a better place for all. Please do give us a call right now. 877-500-5266.
You mentioned win-win. I had underlined to quote this just briefly. This is from Stephen Covey in his Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, whose fourth habit has been think win-win. Win-win sees life as a cooperative arena, not a competitive one. Win-win is a frame of mind and heart that instantly seeks mutual benefit in all human interactions. Win-win means agreements or solutions are mutually beneficial and satisfying. We both get to eat the pie, and it tastes pretty darn good. This whole idea of positive thinking, going back to, you know, Norman Vincent Peale, is extremely American. I interviewed also Chris Layman, who wrote The Money Cult, which kind of digs into this psychology philosophy in American history. You obviously interview people who are enmeshed in these ideologies, but as you said, also kind of struggling with them. Talk about some of the individual people and how they exemplify that, both the dominant win-win ideology, but also people coming to question it.
What I've found is, and particularly because of the kind of method that the journalistic method we talked about, where I really try to look at people struggling with these ideas, the most interesting people I found were people who lived within the citadels of power in our age, power and money, whether that's in corporate America or in big philanthropy or in Silicon Valley, but who, frankly, were the kind of people who have questions. And sadly, the kind of people who still have questions are sometimes feel like a minority of people. People who go every day to work at their foundation or Silicon Valley company, but wonder if they're doing the right thing, but wonder if they're really living on the right side of justice as they tell themselves they are, and who were struggle with it themselves, but willing to struggle with it with me. So I wrote their stories as they struggle with it. So there's Darren Walker, the head of the Ford Foundation, who I think deeply believes, as someone who's, you know, in some ways one of the chief sages and actors of the philanthropy world, and who deeply believes in what he's doing, otherwise he wouldn't be doing it as the head of the Ford Foundation, and who at the same time is someone who was black, gay, and from an extremely poor town, Louisiana, and then Texas, who also understands the pretensions of powerful people pretending they're helping, and who I think sits in many of the rooms he's in with a double consciousness, at one level believing that getting these rich, powerful people together can make a difference, and he's seen it make a difference, and who at another level is constantly hearing, you know, rich guys tell him that they made their money themselves, even though they happen to be born rich and white and male, and who's able to see through the power structure that he's standing on top of. And those kinds of people, I also spoke to women who are in these spaces and I think are able to kind of see through those pretensions in a way that sometimes men struggle to. There's something very powerful about people who are in these citadels, but who as a matter of personal identity have lived on the wrong end of power, and therefore kind of know both what it is to stand on top of the mountain and at the base.
You mentioned your experience in India and these incredibly rapid changes happening relatively recently in terms of the really full-on immersion in global market capitalism. Of course, the United States went through that quite a bit earlier. You talk about sort of the history of big philanthropy. And let me just quote, a marked feature of American giving before the age of big philanthropy was the helping of the many by the many. And these, you know, these fraternal associations that burgeoned in the 18th and 19th centuries as a way of a buffer against those big, huge forces, people struggling with American capitalism at the time. Anyway, you say how it evolved into big philanthropy towards the end of the 19th century. And then it itself has mutated further, whatever big philanthropy is now. But give a quick history of the origins and the development of big philanthropy.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's actually a very modern creation. We think of it as maybe an old thing, but, you know, as you say, there's a longer history of the many helping the many. You have benevolent associations. You had, you know, you had people donating their money to all kinds of causes, often palliative, you know, just treating symptoms of social problems. In the late 19th and early 20th century, you started to have these extraordinary fortunes built because of the new industrial age. And you had the rise of, you know, a new class of kind of what we today would call billionaires, although they may not have been dollar billionaires in some cases back then. People really with the kind of wealth that could, if spent in particular ways, not just soothe a little bit of pain, but make change and have an effect in parts of the society comparable to the kind of effect governments have, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, and others. And so as that started to happen, you really had the rise of modern philanthropy, which was giving in this way that was more at the systems level, that was transformative in its potential, that was about private solution of public problems. And in a way, it was a rise of a kind of competitor to government as a provider of public goods. You had a kind of rational scientific approach to this. It wasn't just giving to some local cause, but it was thinking about how you wanted to make society better and all of that. The thing is, as that arose about 100 years ago, there was enormous skepticism about it. People didn't do what they do now, which is kind of, you know, bow and profess gratitude to rich people doing this. They wisely understood that philanthropy was an exertion of power, as the Stanford political scientist Rob Reich puts it. And any exertion of power requires wariness and skepticism, not gratitude. The fact that it's a kind act, public service is a kind act. Serving the military is a kind act. But we're skeptical about the wars that we get involved in. We should be skeptical about the proper administration of the welfare programs that the government administers. Just because people are doing noble things doesn't mean you kind of just smile and say thank you. And that was the attitude back then. And people really back then, there was a whole culture of saying, well, how was this money made? And do these people deserve to have this kind of power over public life? And then, thanks in part to the exertions of philanthropy and the fact that so many people ended up, you know, in a way, like on the payroll of philanthropy or having it, you know, sponsor their think tank or sponsor their news outlet or whatever, you know, big philanthropy has succeeded in beating back that perception over 100 years so that now, increasingly, when people give away money, our reaction is gratitude. But I will say, in the last couple years, and I think my book is a small part of a bigger reckoning, that's again started to change. And I think we're getting back to a place where we understand when the tech barons like Mark Zuckerberg and Bezos give away, that something more complicated is going on. Yes, it's noble, and yes, it's kind, but that's not the end of the analysis. We also have questions and concerns about the power they have. We have questions and concerns about whether they are upholding the system that caused some of those problems. And that's all to the good.
Well, you know, it's interesting. If one follows the so-called alt-right, certain places on the internet, one sees that George Soros is certainly not looked upon kindly by those people. He's sort of one of the boogeymen of that. But of course, they don't look at the Koch brothers or other, the, you know, right-wing philanthropists, so-called philanthropists. And so it's like, it's almost like up to now, sort of the liberals have had their philanthropists, the conservatives had their philanthropists, but there really hasn't been much of an overall analysis, as you're doing, of kind of the structural way that philanthropy works. In some ways, sort of the, well, okay, let me just tell my story briefly. I was, you know, involved in Earth First, the so-called radical environmental movement. We were doing the forest protection here. And it got basically, the movement got taken out of our hands. And the analysis that I think is the right one is that, you know, it was largely because of these big so-called liberal foundations, Pew Memorial Trust, et cetera, basically took over the direction of the movement, mostly Democrat Party allied foundations, and basically weakened it by removing the sort of center of power and gravity and organizing from where it is to Washington, D.C. And anyway, long story, but it's a story in the environmental movement that's been repeated over and over again in other movements. And so, you know, I've looked at it from that side, from the so-called, you know, progressive activist side. But most people never have had that analysis of how philanthropy works, how big foundations work. At the same time, you've got, you know, the rise of the big conservative foundation sort of as a post-60s reaction to sort of take back the lost cultural ground that happened in the 60s. And you've got these competing philanthropies, you know, but structurally, philanthropy has always served to maintain, as you say, capitalist power, capitalist interests at the expense of everybody. So you think maybe now there is some emerging analysis of the way that works?
Yeah, I mean, I think this reckoning is kind of broad-based. You know, I think if you look at, you know, Jane Mayer from The New Yorker wrote this incredible book called Dark Money, which is about the political right's use of philanthropy, among other tools, but in a heavy way, philanthropy, to prosecute its takeover of government and of much of discourse in the media and academia, even over the last generation. And that's a case study in people who I think, you know, were not really trying to make the world a better place, but were trying to grab wealth and power and pursue an agenda of deregulation for their businesses, and who achieved that using philanthropy to secure power and discredit government. I think the story I tell is a slightly different one, which is people who I think are generally more on the left, more sincere in their desire to make the world a better place and promote equality and justice, but who have a profound limitation in their inability to call out a system that causes many of the problems they purport to solve. And therefore, that puts them in a place where, even when they're helping and trying to improve things, they often end up, you know, shoring up the very system causing the problem.
And you are listening to this great interview with Paul Rowland interviewing Anand Giridharadas. This is an amazing interview. It, in fact, exposes what we've all kind of known to be the case, right? That the ruling elite do not really have vested interest in changing the systems that create the misery and the conditions that we are finding ourselves resisting around the world. So please do call right now and support this dynamic information. This is a really important interview. Thank you, Paul, for doing it. And we're asking our listeners to call 877-500-5266 to make sure that you are continuing your support to community radio so we can continue to bring you important programs just like this. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm.
You know, if you want to contribute at just $6.66, what an odd number, but it's real, $80 a year, you can get this book, Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. Such an important conversation, and I think one that flies right beneath the radar so much. I know many people who consider themselves progressive contribute to things like this and support charities like this without realizing what happens underneath, what other problems there are. I know that you guys are discerning listeners, discerning citizens of this country. Take a moment right now, become a member at 877-500-5266. Pick up a copy of this book for just $80 a year. And, you know, give yourself the information that you can share with all of those around you. Learn the stuff that maybe you don't even want to learn. Wouldn't it be nice if they really were all benevolent? But we know that's not true. And so, you know, often charities are just a cover for the bad things that some companies are doing behind the scenes, you know, especially when we're talking about petrochemical companies. So take a moment right now, say, I want to learn more. I want to find out what's in that book, and call kboo.fm. I mean, not call it. You can
click,
go to
click on kboo.fm and click the donate button.
That's right.
If you have the phone app, tap the donate button there. If you have your phone in your hand and you're not on the phone app, just call 877-500-5266. 5266 or stop on by 20 Southeast 8th. We're a half block south of Burnside on beautiful scenic Southeast 8th Avenue in central Portland. So come on by and take a tour of the station. Find out how you can actually get more involved in your community radio station. See how we put your money to use in service of all the communities accessing KABU. Please call right now. We are looking to raise, again, about a little over $34,000 before Saturday evening. And we do that one person at a time, calling in with your support, just like Sandra has done, just like Margaret has done, just like Terrence have done.
Thank you
all for your calls of support this morning, renewing your memberships to KABU, continuing your support, becoming members of KABU. It is all so very important. So please do continue that support. Bring your support to your community and make sure that we are all stronger together, because it is an act of solidarity. And it is time, my friends, to practice solidarity like our lives depend on it, because in fact they do. It is a very simple and obvious truth. We have to come together. The world is a little topsy-turvy. It's kind of on fire, and it takes grassroots support to actually create effective resistance. You are hearing an interview that really just spells it out. We cannot leave this to the hands of giant NGOs. We cannot leave this to the hands of the corporations. They do not have our interests at heart. We do, right? It is community members. It is the grassroots.
Yeah, you know.
Go ahead, Paul.
Well, I the phrase that he used, the many helping the many, I think that really tells it all. It's a very different approach, and it's really the foundation of how independent community radio started and how we started 50 years ago. And that's what we try to do. We are very skeptical of power. We contributions from big bag corporations like Monsanto. So we are the many helping the many. We are the reflection of the many, or at least we try to be. And 877-500-5266. We got about 25 minutes left. I just want to do a little housekeeping for the show. At 9 on Political Perspectives, Lisa Loving talks to multimedia journalist Christopher Francisco about his work covering Standing Rock and the new emerging pipeline protests around the nation. At 10, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary. 10:15, as always, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And 11, The Food Show looks ahead to the Northwest Permaculture Convergence in Toledo, Washington, plus the New Zealand artist using sound to enhance eating experiences. So I think it's about time to get back to this interview with Anand Giridharidas, Winners Take All, the Elite Charade of Changing the World. So few of us are prepared intellectually by our training to really understand the dynamics of the capitalist system. It's very difficult to get something like Occupy going, but that happened. And then Black Lives Matter was a reaction to the continual killing of young black men by police. So these are some social movements, post-60s social movements that arose and started to get more of a systemic challenge. But so my question is, in the world of big philanthropy, where these individual people are having these crises of conscience, these internal conflicts, structural problems like structural racism, whose maybe most obvious manifestation is the killing of young people of color by police. That's certainly one of them that people see in a media spectacle world. Another, of course, climate change, which we see now with the increasing impact with these hurricanes and fires and such. So do these kind of things, these basic structural problems, do you see people starting to more question this dominant ideology of win-win and market-based solutions? And, I think of, in terms of climate change, I think of, these something like a divestment from fossil fuel companies sort of being a market-based or carbon trading. That seems to be still the dominant mode in like the big environmental movement. But do you see any big major challenges to that ideology in the face of what's actually happening?
Yeah, I think we're actually living in a very interesting moment when it comes to these questions. I think if you think about the story of big tech, for example, in Silicon Valley that we told 5 years ago. It's very different than the narrative today. I mean, 5 years ago, it was generally a story of like, wow, look at these amazing things these people are building, right? And now I think it's a story of, wow, look at this new power center that's somewhat unaccountable and full of self-delusions about making the world a better place when, in fact, you know, maybe compromising our federal election and any number of other sins. I think a similar thing's happening in the world of philanthropy. You, again, you know, had that gratitude reaction 5 years ago as the dominant one. And I think today, thanks to the work of many writers and scholars and people who've been kind of pointing out the limitations, the tragic limitations of billionaire giving to solve structural problems, perhaps the inherent inability of billionaires to do so unless they truly change themselves before they seek to change the world, I think you have a very different conversation that's happening in the philanthropy world as some of the people I write about embody. So I think we're actually living in a very fruitful time to have these conversations.
This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to KBOO, and this is More Talk Radio with Paul Roland. And we're going to get right to some words from Linda. Hello, Linda. Talk to us about the Pledge Drive.
Hi, Tammy.
Please.
So glad you're here with us this morning. I want to let you know that you can become a member of KBOO right this very minute by dialing 877-500-5266. And if you want to contribute at the $80 a year level, you can get a copy of this book. And I want to say out there, maybe you're not a big book reader, but you know somebody who is. I have a friend who used to give me all the books that he would get because I would read them. That was our deal. He bought them, I read them. You know what?
That's a great deal, Linda. I want a friend like that.
Yeah, I married him for a while. It was a good deal.
Nice.
I still get books from him. But I want to say, buy this book. Not buy it. Contribute at a level, $80 a year, that gets you this book, Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. I know you have people you want to talk with about this book. It's easy to do. You've got to dial it or click your phone, 877-500-5266, or click on our donate button if you're at kboo.fm. It's easy to become a member. We don't just say that. It really is. But it does take getting over whatever little resistance you have to going ahead and doing something right here this morning out of your routine. You're already, you know, on your way to work or whatever it is. But we're asking you, yeah, take a moment out of your routine. It's a really small moment, but it's a moment that will make your whole life happier, I believe. I know that most members here feel real good about being members of KBOO Community Radio because they know they're helping their whole community with the information that's brought to them.
In a genuine way, in an important way, because it is, in fact, your grassroots support that keeps us independent. We, as Paul was saying, you know, the many serving the many. It is the community serving the community. We are taking care in a mutual aid kind of way of this important community resource because, in fact, KBOO is important in bringing you news and information that is relevant to our lives. It is information that we need so that we can make our own decisions and actually, you know, do something good for the world. Try to break systems of oppression that are generations old. Try to understand the roots of imperialism and what's happening with refugee crisis. We bring you information that is really neglected in other media. We bring you information that is controversial. We bring you information that you need in your life so that you can be informed and that you can make informed decisions to make the world a better place. It's an act that we do together, and we're asking you to act right now with us at 877-500-5266. Become a member of KBOO this morning with your contribution of $80 or more. We would love to give you a copy of Winners Take All. We just have one copy left, so you'll want to make sure you're calling right now and asking for that as your thank you gift when you reach us at 877-500-5266. Understand that your support is actually active participation at your community radio station. It is, in fact, you becoming a radio activist. It is, in fact, you empowering your community through the amplification of so many voices that need to be heard. We must be heard together, and it is up to each and every one of us right now to make a difference. Make that phone call that makes such a difference. You're taking a stand for the truth and for relevant information by becoming a KABU member this morning. Give us a call at 877-500-5266. Help us reach that $400 goal. We can only do it with you. Your contribution is vital right now at 877-500-5266.
So talk about Market World.
You know, Market World is, you know, I learned a long time ago in writing that coinage is very important as a way to kind of make people see reality in a slightly different way. And I wanted to scoop together a lot of things that I think people tend to see as separate and kind of absorb them into one big bucket. And so I called that bucket Market World. One word, capital N, capital W. The Market World is a complex of people and institutions and their kind of values that are trying to make the world a better place while protecting their position on top of the world, that are trying to make a difference while protecting their chance to make a killing, that are trying to give while protecting their opportunity to keep taking, that are trying to fight for equality and justice for people while in many ways refusing to get off people's backs. And that consists of people in the foundation and philanthropic world. It consists of people in big corporations that do a little bit of CSR, even as they continue kind of raping and pillaging in the economy. It consists of employers who make a big splash about, you know, a volunteer day once a year, but, you know, make their employees feel like crap every other day of the year. It is these educational institutions that have become part of grooming people to believe that change is something you make in the market, not through movements and politics and the law. It is any number of these institutions and a complex of these institutions and people that have tried to sell the idea of social change as something you can do for free, at zero cost to the winners, at zero cost to the powerful, while preserving the status quo. And I became very interested in trying to deconstruct and see if that was in fact the case.
So just a couple of last questions. As I said, you know, that book, The Money Cult by Chris Layman, who I interviewed also on KABU, kind of traced sort of a ideology of a prosperity consciousness in American history. You, on your win-win chapter, talk about Adam Smith as at the root in some ways of this idea of philanthropy is the idea of these Adam Smith ideas that sort of selfishness, you know, trickle-down selfishness, that, you know, that the social benefits of human selfishness, in, you know, he talks about the famous metaphor of the invisible hand. Want to talk to us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that, you know, we all know this kind of Adam Smith invisible hand theory that in many ways has animated right-wing free market thinking for a long time, which is the view that rich people just doing what they want to do, the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker selling their stuff, not worrying about the greater good, will on its own provide for the greater good because they'll make things that are useful to people and you know, people will end up pumping, you know, money into the economy that benefits others. And Adam Smith basically just said the winners should just focus on doing them, winning, and others will passively benefit as a happy byproduct of their selfishness. And one of the things I really want to explain and explore in this book, Winners Take All, is that I think we are living under the reign of a much more dramatic ideology that I call win-winism, which actually goes further than Adam Smith, and it almost turns Adam Smith upside down. Instead of saying that we should just leave the winners alone because simply being selfish and doing what they want to do will inadvertently make others better off, the new win-win people, and sometimes this is ideas called philanthrocapitalism, is that actually the winners of our age are specially qualified to be in charge of making the world better. So instead of just going about their way and inadvertently, you know, as a happy byproduct improving the world, they should be placed in charge of change. They are, as this book, Philanthrocapitalism, put it, they're hyper agents who are specially capable of making things better. They make, you know, we should put our education system in charge of them. Mark Zuckerberg should be in charge of education in Newark. Mark Zuckerberg should be in charge of getting all the diseases. People who got lucky on one hedge fund in, you know, in the 2000s should now kind of redesign, you know, some ballet or arts institution. And this is actually, although it feels derivative of the Adam Smith tradition, it's actually a profound and much more radical shift away from the idea of trickle-down economics and leaving the rich alone. It's just the idea that we should be ruled by the rich and they should assertively, you know, take charge of our society.
Well, you have been listening to Anand Giridharadas, the author of Winners Take All, The Elite Charade of Changing the World. And you've been listening to him because Paul Rowland, are you there, Paul?
I am.
Paul Rowland, who has Wednesday morning talk radio. I know you tune in and listen to him. He brought us this guest. Thank you, Paul. I want to have people show their support and we've got one copy left of this book. Call us at 877-500-5266. And you can have that book as a thank you gift for just an $80 a year contribution. That's real doable when you break it out. I think it's like $6.66 or something like that. It's very little, and it comes out the same time every month when you do it with KBOO. Take a moment right now, show your support for this kind of programming, and go to kboo.fm and click the donate button.
It is a simple thing to do and a very important act to, in fact, claim the airwaves, to amplify your voice through those airwaves, and to amplify the voices of so many other community members and thinkers and authors and organizers and activists and performers. All manner of folks come here to access the KBOO airwaves so that we can continue to provide great radio to the communities. And we are here doing that right now. You're hearing Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with Paul. His guest this morning, Anand Giridharadas, is an important voice as we are looking at making sense of our world. This is a great book. I've been thumbing through a copy that I was given so that I could talk about it authoritatively with you. And it is a really great book. I really hope that you are calling right now to claim that last copy as your thank you gift with your $80 a year contribution or more at 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. 877-500-5266 is the number to call to become a member. And everyone calling that number today, I have to say, everyone calling that number today will be entered to win their chance to win a prize. Call 877-500-5266 right now for your chance to win 12 bottles of wine. And that's coming in three varieties of Pinot from St. Joseph's Winery. You can go to kboo.fm for all the details and the rules and regulations and really details on all the prizes, too. But right now, we're asking you to understand that everyone wins every day long with KBOO in your ear. And you are an important part of keeping KBOO in your ear, keeping KBOO strong and vital as we go through our morning public affairs offerings, bringing you information that's relevant and information that is important to your life. Call us and support that effort. 877-500-5266.
Yeah, we got about 8 minutes left in the show, and we'd really like to hear some more people call in and express support, not just for this program, but for KBOO Radio as a whole. You know, I don't take each phone call, each contribution as a stroke to my own personal ego, but it, you know, it feels good. It feels good to know that people are, certainly that people are listening, and that people are, you know, are care that much about it to call in and support on an ongoing basis KBOO Community Radio.
That's absolutely true. Call right now, 877-500-5266. We do have one copy left. You know that public affairs is important information. You tune in to the talk radio strip locally produced Monday through Friday. You call, you listen in for the radio zine locally produced for the most part, Monday through Friday, 9 to noon. You call it, you listen because this is information that is relevant. This is information that keeps you connected to something larger than yourself. This is information where we can hear from other community members about what's important, what's vital, what they're working on, how we're making a difference in this rather dreary world together. And it is so important that we do work together to change things, that we do work together to turn it over. And we're asking you to step forward right now and do your part. 877-500-5266. You are more informed about the world you live in because you listen to KABU Community Radio. And right now, you are stepping forward to say, yeah, you understand that, and you're going to make a difference this morning with your contribution. Become a member of KABU right now. 877-500-5266.
That seems to be the central thesis of your book. So I guess one last question. So is it actually possible to transform things within the capitalist system?
I mean, if you look around the world today, there's a lot of different capitalisms. Germany has capitalism, France has capitalism, Britain has capitalism, and there's a great variety. The Chinese have capitalism. There's a great variety of systems within capitalism. And some are better than others at not only allowing there to be a flourishing private market, which I think is a good thing, but also many of those societies, unlike us, don't, decide that you should die of a preventable disease because you don't happen to work 30 hours a week and therefore don't qualify for healthcare benefits. And many of those societies don't believe that companies should only be run for the benefit of shareholders, but actually believe in putting other stakeholders on the board so that companies serve profit with their communities and not in spite of them, and so on and so forth. So we have been, I think capitalism is not an intrinsic thing. There's a lot of different types of capitalism and a lot of different ways to run and order capitalism. And I think the way we are doing it now is broken and has led to a country in which most people feel the world to be rigged against them. And I think it is more than possible to build the kind of movements that would allow us to build a better capitalism and a better society that works for most Americans.
So you don't think Marx was right, that there's an inherent contradiction within the capitalist dynamic that leads to basically what you lay out in your book?
I don't think there's anything inherent. I think there's an inherent tension, but I don't think there's an inherent incompatibility, just because I've been to other places where they have great companies, great dynamism. They have the internet, they have, roads and cars and iPhones, but they also don't leave people to die on the street the way we do. And so I actually have hope that there's a lot of different ways to do this and that it's not all or nothing.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us, Anand. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you have been listening to this conversation between Paul Roland and Anand Giridharadas this morning here on KABU. That's Winners Take All, the book that he has written. You've been listening to the conversation. It is an important book. It is a book that you can read and, again, continue the conversation with your friends and family well after that fact. It's important information to get out there because, in fact, here at KABU, we're looking at changing the world to a better place. We'd like to do it in a way that actually is substantive, that is consistent with our values, that makes sense, and it has long-lasting impact. So corporate greenwashing just really isn't the way to go. So please do contribute to this meaningful grassroots community institution that supports so many communities. We amplify our voices together. And we ask you to step forward right now with your voice loud and clear, saying yes to your community and yes to your community radio station. $80 over the course of a year adds up to or can break down to $6.66 a month. We're asking you to consider giving it that level right now and getting the last copy of Winners Take All this morning. Please do Make that call right now, 877-500-5266. I want to thank Aaron. Aaron has contributed on the web this morning during the last hour. Thank you so much, Aaron, for making a difference. If you are more comfortable giving on the web this morning, maybe you're not really feeling interactive, maybe you don't really want to talk to somebody on the phone, then you can do it quickly at kboo.fm. Just do it there online. And you can become a member of KBOO quickly and silently right now.
Oh, here, leave it.
KBOO.fm. Linda, you were about to chime in.
I was going to say, or KBOO.fm. And, you know, exactly I like to invite people to...
In the
I'd like to invite people to become a member right now. It's really easy to do it. KBOO.fm. Sorry, we're hearing some background noise. We'll get that sorted out.
I'd like to ask you questions about your trip.
So they're going to figure that out in our engineer room. Know that everybody here is a volunteer. That was a quick glitch. It's handled. Take a moment right now. Become a member. You know, wake yourself up if you're a little bit asleep. Maybe you've gotten depressed about the way the world is and you don't really feel like doing anything because it's so darn bad. And I'm using nice words for that. You know, well, wake yourself up and make a difference with your dollars
words.
Because you will know that you are not helpless, that you are not helpless in the face of what's going on, that you have choices you can make, and we will show them to you, and we will give you the information you need to make those decisions. One decision I'd like you to make right now is to become a member of this community radio station. Join the others who have seen how important it is to get the information you get from this station. It's easy to become a member. It's 877-500-5266. If you're out there and you've never been a member, join now.
And I want to, you know, let people know you can also come in 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and make your contribution in person. We have somebody who has stopped by to do that right now, and it's always exciting. We'd love to meet you. We'd love to show you around the studio and show you how we put your money to service all of the communities that access KBOO. It is a great thing to do this morning, so please do stop by 20 Southeast 8th, or perhaps the most convenient way to become a member at this moment is to grab the phone and dial 877-500-5266. Now onwards to the incomparable Wednesday morning radio zine.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who've donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast provided by Trader Joe's, a grocery chain open daily from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. Lunch provided by Corbett Fish House, located at 5901 Southwest Corbett Avenue. Corbett Fish House serves seafood dishes open from lunch to dinner. Dinner provided by Bocce's on 7th, located at 1728 Southeast 7th Avenue, open Wednesday through Sunday from 4 to 9. Bocce's serves a full Italian menu. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO's prize drawing rules. Everyone who donates will be entered into the drive prize drawings. No purchase necessary to be entered. Making a purchase or contribution will not improve an individual's chance for winning. The fall drive prize drawing is subject to all applicable federal, state, and local laws and regulations.